everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast, episode 310 to be exact. Well, I'm back, folks. I am back. Cancer-free once again. So praise God for that. Once again, thank you very much to the great doctors at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. And most of all, thanks to the great physician above, the Lord Jesus Christ, because between both of them, they have enabled me to be cancer-free again. My stem cell transplant went, well, I gotta tell you, it was rough. Whew! Those 3 weeks in the hospital, probably the roughest thing I've ever had to fight in my entire life. And a lot of recovery afterwards. I'm still in recovery, folks. Even though I'm back home in San Antonio and so forth, and I'm on the road for just a really short trip. I'm not going on a business trip right now, but I am in the Handgun World Mobile Studio. The 2002 Honda Accord, the luxurious, spacious, elegant Honda Accord 2002 with 149,000 miles. What a luxurious, gorgeous mobile studio this is. Anyway, even though I'm back in this thing, it doesn't mean that I'm back 100%. This is going to be another several months before I get fully recovered. But anyway, it's good to be back. Many thanks to all of you. You know, I believe that God works in great ways, and he brings people like you to encourage others. And many of you did. So many of you have encouraged me through Facebook messages, through emails, through voicemails. And by the way, all of you who have left an encouraging voicemail for me, I did receive it. I just want you to know that. I received it, and I listened to it, and thank you very much. And I get every single Facebook message and post. I go through all that stuff quite a bit. So thank you very much. All right. Well, for this episode, I'm headed out to the shooting range. I'm going over to Ben Branham's house right now to pick up Ben. And we are going to go over to the shooting range to do some practice. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. It's been a long time since I've been at the range shooting and practicing and training like I like to practice and train. Most of you know I'm not a guy that stands there and plinks away at a square range. I don't believe much in that other than to just test out the function of your gun. To me, that's about the only benefit you get, is testing out your equipment when you do that. I like to go and train. I like to draw from the holster. I like to be able to move, shoot, put rounds on targets. So we are headed to a place to shoot today, and we're going to go over there for about 2 hours worth of practice. Let me tell you the guns that I'm bringing along. I'm bringing along my Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm Compact. I need more time. I need more trigger time with that fine little pistol. I'm bringing along my Glock 26 subcompact 9mm. And I'm bringing along my Smith & Wesson M&P Pro 9mm. Ben's been borrowing that for the last 3 months from me, and he's going to give that back to me today, and I'm going to run that through its paces. I don't have enough trigger time with that either. Then I'm bringing along my Glock 42. I got that back from Glock several months ago with new magazines, and they said that they, you know, worked it over or did whatever it is that they do to ensure reliability. Now, that may sound strange when I mention a Glock ensuring reliability, right? Hey, you know what? I had some serious challenges with my Glock 42 when I first got it. Other people say it's stone cold reliable, like Glocks are known to be. But you know what? I had some challenges. So I haven't had a chance to really shoot it a lot since I got it back from Glock. So today's going to be that day. I'm going to run several, a little over 100 rounds through it to see how reliable it is with new magazines. And we'll see what happens. But it is the new style Glock 42 magazines. I have heard that there are some issues with the older style Glock 42 magazines. There are two different types. There's the style that the gun originally shipped with when they first came out. But Glock has redesigned those Glock 42 magazines. So you might want to get on the internet, search out the difference between those, see which ones you have. I will give you a report after this practice session and let you know how that performed. Now, I'm sure on the way to the range, Ben and I are going to talk a little bit. We're going to sit here while we're while I'm driving in the Handgun World mobile studio, and we're going to talk. We're going to do it in a safe way because I'm going to use the speakerphone feature on my recorder and make sure that we're doing it, you know, hands-free and do that the correct, safe way. But I'm sure that Ben and I'll have some things to say on the way to the range. Now, a couple of other things I want to mention. I am going to be training from the appendix carry position today, most of the time. I want to practice a lot carrying from both positions, the appendix carry and strong side carry. The reason I want to do that is because I want to get good at both. I've been mainly shooting from appendix lately. I mean, like the last several training classes that I taught and practice sessions and so forth, before I had to go through some of those really gnarly treatments, I've been doing mostly appendix carry. Well, now I want to keep doing that, but also train some strong side carry and get good with both. Now, I do carry both ways, and some people say I shouldn't do that. What do you think? I'd like to hear your opinion, especially if you're real experienced at carrying both ways and you're real experienced at carrying a gun. I'd like to hear what you have to say. The conventional wisdom is that if you carry both ways, either appendix or strong side, that, you know, I guess the thinking is you might not know which way you're carrying when that awful time comes and you have to actually use your gun. And you might reach to the wrong place to get your firearm. Now, you know, I've thought about that a lot, and I thought, how can I possibly forget where I'm carrying a gun and what gun I'm carrying? I mean, I've heard people say that kind of stuff, but, you know, you shouldn't forget. You shouldn't forget where you're carrying and what you're carrying and all that. But I guess in the heat of the moment, in the awful, very, I'm sure, very scary time where you had to use your pistol to defend your life or the life of a loved one, you know, the brain goes to mush, as they say. You know, that's the conventional wisdom. What do you think of that? Do you agree? Do you disagree? I'm not quite so sure that I agree with that. Most of the time I appendix carry. And, you know, even though I carry guns that are very concealable and very light, I don't forget that they're there. And I know exactly what to do to clear my cover garment and reach for that pistol if I've got to use it. Same with strong side. I carry sometimes smaller guns, and, you know, often I carry my Glock 19, my still favorite handgun of all time. I'm not going to forget where I'm carrying my Glock 19. At least I don't think so. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm all wet on this, and most of you know I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. If somebody's got a really good argument or some really good examples, see, I like examples. So if you've got an example, if you've got a case, or if you know of a situation where someone forgot which position that they were carrying their pistol and therefore almost lost their life or something really bad happened to them because they forgot where they were carrying their gun and they needed it, let me know about that case. You know, you hear a lot of internet chatter about that. You read a lot on forums and things, and people say that, and trainers say that. I'm just trying to take an analytical approach to this here and figure out, well, what is really the real deal here? What is it? You know, based on actual events, what actually happened? I'd like to know that. So send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. Shoot me a voicemail, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Send me a Facebook message, whatever. By the way, if you want to follow me on Facebook, it's Handgun World Podcast on Facebook. or facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. And that's a great way to follow me. Please like that page. Once again, the voicemail number, 210-646-1727. Please keep in mind that any voicemail you send me, I'm going to put it on the air unless you tell me not to. But give me some examples of that, or at least your thoughts on that, and we'll go from there. Okay, I'm almost at Ben's house. Got to pick him up. We'll get to the range. And like I said, probably the next segment that you're going to hear is Ben and I doing some yakking on the way to the shooting range about guns and all sorts of things and what we're going to practice and so forth. All right, let's take a quick break.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre. But that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Run on. All right, Ben's back with me. Ben, you haven't been on the show in a while.
I don't think we've seen each other in a while, so it's just good to be back. We're going to the range, so it's always a good day.
Yeah, we're headed out to a place to shoot to go do some practicing. I set this up because I just haven't been to range to do some real shooting, I mean some real training, in a long time. So I'm ready to do some practicing. How about you?
I always am. I'll bust the rust off of you. I'll get you running around the range a little bit. Get you back in shape real quick.
Hey, for those of you who might be somewhat new listeners to my show, Ben's the host of the Modern Self-Protection Podcast, another podcast that you should be listening to. If you're not, you can find it on iTunes, Modern Self-Protection, or at modernselfprotection.com. So, Ben, what do you want to practice today?
Honestly, I need to practice lateral movement with my pistol. And I know that's one thing that you're really good at, so I'm expecting you to give me some pointers. I taught a class last week, and I have forward and backwards. I have that to a T. I look awesome, like super duper fast and everything. And then I started doing lateral movement, and I good thing I got to the range about an hour early to practice before I had my class, because it didn't look that really great when I started. I had to practice 5 or 6 times and then get out there, and I could show my students what to do. So I'll take your pointers on the lateral movement there. I know you're better at that than I am.
I might be a little rusty today because it's been months since I've gone out there and done a lot of lateral movement training, but I'll do the best I can. You know, you got to learn to move all different ways, forward, backward, laterally. You got to move on the diagonals. Those are other classes that you should take where they got you moving in that direction. Remember the point shooting class we took?
Oh, I love the point shooting stuff, and I've been getting better and better at that. I've been going to the local range here without you goofing off. They have steel at 10 yards. I've gotten to the point where I point shoot the 10-yard targets. I can hit them every time. So point shooters, I can point shoot.
But that's not possible, Ben. Point shooting is not possible and not practical. You know that now.
Oh, yeah. Come to one of mine and Bob's classes, the Beyond Concealed Carry class. I'll show you where your point shooting will be very, very practical and where your sights are impractical.
Yeah, especially the Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced classes, the 2 days that we got on the books in South Dakota, Northern Ohio, out in the state of Washington. So check our websites for that, because we might be coming to an area near you. So you want to practice lateral movement. I'm going to practice that, but I'm also going to practice. My draw stroke, I think, it has suffered a lot. So I'm going to work, as I was mentioning in the introduction, I'm going to work both from appendix and strong side carry. What about you?
Sure, why not? Draw always works. For me, the draw stroke is something easy for me to keep up, because I'll practice that, I don't know, 3-4 times a week at home, dry practice. I always incorporate the draw stroke in my dry practice, no matter what else I'm doing. So the draw stroke for me becomes very, very easy because I'm practicing it all the time. It's that live fire, some of the stuff that I need to work on. So,
well, I guess what I meant to say is drawing and then putting hits on target real fast right away. That's something you can't do in dry practice. You can't draw and fire and put hits on target unless you're shooting an airsoft in your garage or in your backyard or something like that. But I like to be able to draw, fire, get that recoil impulse right away, get the shots on target.
Yeah, oh, well, I'm with you. You're right. But it's become, I don't know if it's come second rote or nature or what, but now it's become to the time or the point in time in my life at shooting where I go to the range to do the draw stroke just to confirm that my practice is working like it should. I don't really have to, it's not that big a deal. I go to the range and out of the holster that first shot, if you listen to my podcast, I think that's one of the most important things that you could ever practice is the draw to that first shot, because that's probably where your life's going to depend the most on. And I've gotten to the point where it's just almost second nature and rote. So when I go to the range, I practice a couple times to make sure that my practice has been working. That's it. And it really is just confirming that my dry practice has been working. I don't know how to explain that. I'm going to break that down and see if I can teach that as a course. But some of these things you just kind of learn as you go the hard way by repetition.
You know, Ben, I got to admit something to you. You know, you brought up, I think about a year ago when we were sitting doing one of our brainstorming sessions, you brought up, you know, the art of making the first hit, drawing and making that first hit on target. And I kind of took that a little too lightly. I kind of figured, yeah, well, that's okay. But now I realize you're right because, you know, in the heat of the moment, if that bad day ever comes and we got to use our pistol, drawing and making that first hit or two, that's, you know, it's got to be the most important thing. A lot of people don't seem to practice on that enough.
I don't think so. That's why we developed that whole day course on the art of the first hit. I think that's an awesome course. And if you come to take one of those, that's an advanced course. But, man, you'll learn things that you never thought you could do and what you can and can't do with a pistol out of the holster. And I kind of, that all came together from years and years of studying gunfighting. And every police officer that I've been able to actually interview and talk to and ask questions, every single one of them has said, when I asked them, you know, what's the most important skill for you to survive a gun battle? And they knew where I was coming from, actually, you know, studying gunfighting. They said that draw to first hit, every single one of them. So that includes undercover guys. That includes guys that happen in the uniform. That includes a guy that was in three gun battles, and his second gun battle, he thought he was going to die because he drew his pistol on his 1911. Guy was coming at him with a shotgun, drew his pistol nice and clean, safety off, click, bad round. So, you know, even then, he said the most important thing was that draw to the first hit. And he'd been in three gun battles, so it was kind of nice to talk to him.
Interesting. He heard the loudest sound a shooter can hear is a click when he was expecting a bang, right?
Yeah, and he actually tells the story of how the guy was coming, it was a hotel, the call was a guy with a gun, he's coming out in full uniform. He said there's like 50 yards from where he parked his car to the front door, and they had blockades up so he couldn't drive up there. So he gets out of his car, starts moving towards the front door, and he's about 20 yards from this guy when he comes out with a 12-gauge in his hand. So he draws his pistol, nice smooth draw, sees that front sight, click, and he says, it's kind of funny, he says he closed his eyes and just kind of cowered behind his pistol, going, oh, this is the end, make it quick. And then he says he remembers saying, oh, no, F this. Tap rack, get back in the fight. And he says by the time he opened his eyes, got back in the fight, his tap rack drill, looked back up his front sight, the guy's got the shotgun in his mouth, and he's trying to take his own life. So that's kind of an interesting play on the whole thing, what could happen. But, hey, you know, when that guy tells you what's the most important skill you could ever learn to be in a gunfight, draw that first hit, you might want to listen to him from his experience.
Well, and you just mentioned experience. You know, I like examples from people who have been there, done that, had these negative experiences, and they learn. And you also just illustrated the importance of learning good malfunction clearing drills, which, you know, in any really good training class that you go to, there's going to be some malfunction clearing that's going to be taught to you, and that's a big reason why.
Yeah, and we actually had to add that back into our intermediate level class because it was just becoming an issue. And I don't know why, but I've seen more and more malfunctions lately in all of our classes. The last couple that I've taught without you because you've been in the hospital, there's a ton of malfunctions going on. I don't know if that's due to improper maintenance or the weapons or really, I think it's more of the ammo crunch that happened a couple years ago, because I know that I know you guys are going to argue with me, but Winchester White Box. I've shot tens of thousands of rounds of Winchester White Box. It really is my favorite handgun ammo to shoot. I will pick that almost over anything else, at least until the last couple years. I used to never have a problem. 1 in 1,000, forget it. It was 1 in 10,000 rounds would be bad coming out of the Winchester plant. And for some reason, in the last couple years, those 100-round boxes that I used to buy forever, they've started to have bad rounds in them. Just bad primer. One of them, I saw the side of the casing was pulled down because the machine, you know, destroyed the casing when it was put together. I've seen some weird, really weird things. So it might be actually that the quality of ammo has gone down because of the whole crunch. And that's the only thing I can really think of why it's stepped up so much.
Well, you're probably right. In fact, I'm bringing 100 rounds of Winchester White Box I got in the car right now. That's part of what I'm going to shoot, so we'll see what happens to that. But it might be due to the ammo crunch. It might be due to an increased popularity in reloading and people shooting reloads and maybe not having everything reloaded correctly. It also, something else you might want to think about, it could be the big rise in popularity in gun sales, and maybe manufacturers are cutting a few corners here and there in some of their firearms. I don't know. I mean, you know, I kind of thought about that. People are rushing, you know, manufacturers are rushing to get ammo out the door, but gun manufacturers are also rushing to get guns out the door, don't you think?
You could be right. I don't think so, though. And because here's my experience working at the gun shop, is when a gun is bad, it's really, really bad. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If they manufacture the weapon incorrectly and it got to you as the end user, there'll be no question because it will do crazy things. Like we had an AR come back to us that the bolt was completely locked up on. And you could see that I don't know if it was a piece of the gun or a piece of something was inside the bolt and it sheared off inside the bolt carrier, completely and utterly locked up. It wasn't going anywhere. I mean, I tried, a couple other people tried. There was no way we were going to get this bolt to function again. We sent it back to the manufacturer. They sent us I'm pretty sure they just sent us a new part and had to cut that one apart. You know, I wasn't going in there with a Sawzall or a torch to cut the bolt carrier group apart, but it's been my experience when they break that badly. It's not a simple malfunction or something that you can't pin down. They break and they break and then, you know, like your car fell, right? You dropped your car?
My car PM9, yes.
Yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, there's probably a manufacturing defect when the slide is broken. That's been my experience with broken guns and the manufacturing process right now.
By the way, it's on the way back to Carr. It's probably going to be in their shop within the next day or two to get fixed up.
Ah, darn it. I was hoping they'll play with it and look at it before you send it back.
Now, you know, Ben, I could be wrong. Maybe manufacturers are not cutting corners. It's just kind of something that popped into my head. But, you know, the thing to think about malfunctions, I'm going to go ahead and say something very unpopular right now, but it's my opinion that about 90% of all malfunctions are either shooter or ammo issues. What do you think?
Wow, that's... I think you're probably low on your number.
On my number?
Yeah, I'd say most of the malfunctions I see in class are shooter-induced.
Okay.
And I'll say shooter-induced, even the guy that had the Glock 22, which is a 40 caliber, and he dropped the 9mm precision barrel in there from Timberwolf, and then he put his own reloads through, and they weren't working. I will even go with that one being a user-induced because they were just, it was the wrong ammo for that gun. That gun was not going to shoot. If Timberwolf cuts their chambers to be precision tight and match grade, and then when you reload your own ammo, if you don't resize it completely, you get a little bulge in the cartridge normally when you size them, your dies don't work all the way. So I would even say that one would be a user-induced malfunction. But I'd say almost 99, I'd go with three things are going to be a problem if you got a malfunction. It's going to be the user, the magazine, or the ammo. And I'll bet 99.9% of all your problems are those three things in a malfunction.
Yeah, well, and I'm glad you just brought up that example, because you just brought up an example of somebody that messed around with the internals of their gun. I have no problem with that if it's going to be a range gun or a competition gun. I have a problem with messing with the internals if it's going to be a concealed carry gun that you're going to bet your life on. No aftermarket barrels, no aftermarket trigger parts, unless you can prove that they are, 100% reliable, because there's the issue right there. You know, the guy puts in an aftermarket barrel, not to say that those barrels aren't any good, but how can you bet your life on that gun when it's inducing a lot of malfunctions?
Well, yeah, Timberwolf, I love their stuff. And what is Lone Wolf Distributors? I can't remember the name of the company.
Lone Wolf.
Yeah, I love their stuff. I've got tons of their stuff. They're one of the distributors I use for any Glock parts. But, yeah, you got to know what you're doing beyond a shadow of a doubt when you're messing with your carry gun. Mess with your range gun, do whatever you want, goof off with it. But if it's going to be your carry gun, you should know without a doubt that that chamber is cut really, really tight, that it's a match-grade chamber, and you should be testing a bunch of your defensive ammo. And I would say even with one of those, with a match-grade barrel like that, you should be using a nickel-plated brass instead of just brass to make sure that that round is getting ejected for you, extracted and ejected, so that, you know, the next one gets in there. And that was a problem. That guy's gun was getting locked up. I had to take it from him several times, and we eventually just took his gun off the line, and we loaned him a gun.
You know, and there you go. If you are going to carry a pistol with aftermarket parts in it, just get out there and practice, 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 and make sure that it's stone cold, reliable, and figure out which ammo it likes, because you're probably going to take that gun and you're going to make it ammo finicky, and figure out, excuse me, figure out what it likes and stock up like crazy, buy crap loads of that ammo and run that ammo only through your carry gun, I mean, if it's going to be a carry pistol.
Yeah, definitely buy extra ammo. I'm having that problem right now getting carry ammo for my defensive pistol. My ammo's getting old, but I can't find any to replace it. And I can't find it in large enough quantities to try different ammo out. I can't find the ammo that I've been carrying, and I can't find a large enough quantity of the other stuff that I want to replace it, because you got to try all that stuff, right? So if you're going to do that and you find ammo that you like, you probably want 3 or 4 duty loadouts. So if you carry 2 magazines, spare magazines, you know, you should have enough for 3 mags, whatever your gun is. If that's a Glock, it's Glock 19, that's like 46 rounds. So you need to buy like 4 boxes of it just to have in the side, because you need to rotate that stuff out. And here's a tip too. You can tell when your duty ammo is getting bad. If your duty ammo starts turning green instead of that gold color, it's time to change it out. That's about where I am with those Spear Gold Dots I've been carrying for the last year. They've turned this kind of green color, and they got to go.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people say, well, but gee, Bob, that's expensive to run all that carry ammo through my gun. Again, I keep saying this, and I've said it over and over and over again, how much is your life worth? You know, you got to make sure that you have a reliable pistol. I think reliability trumps any kind of accuracy or any kind of other modification on grips, triggers, and then anything that you could make. I think reliability trumps that when you really need your gun the most, don't you?
Yes, and it needs to be your test of reliability, not other people's. I have guns that people will say are unreliable, but I've carried them to defend my life, and it works great. I have a Para-Ordnance 1911 limited edition that was bought in 98, and that thing has ran like a champ. I probably have 15,000 rounds through it, and maybe closer to 20, and the malfunctions happened because I got bad magazines. I had to figure out which magazines works and which don't in that, because it's a 1911. Hello, what's the standard 1911 problem? Magazines. Same thing with those wide-body 1911s. Other people, I'd never trust my life on it because the internet said they were unreliable. Or at the time, it was the gun magazines. You know, Guns and Ammo said those things are unreliable. Well, when you take it and you're honing it and you're making it tighter and tighter tolerances to make it a precision gaming gun, because that's where Para-Ordnance started, was those wide-body magazines for precision games and IDPA for IPSC and USPSA. Yeah, they didn't run all that great. But you know what? The one I got ran like a top. I still have it in my safe. It still runs great. But people say it's unreliable. I don't care what they say. I can get through 10 magazines of my duty ammo as fast as I can pull the trigger without it hiccuping. So I didn't have a problem with it. And I know I never did 10 in a row, but I did 4 and 5 rounds of my duty ammo in a row without it malfunctioning as fast as I could reload it and pull the trigger. So I know that that one worked without a doubt with that ammo, and I had no problem with it. The other one I carried for a long time was a Caltech P32. Itty-bitty little gun. People say it's not worth a darn. Well, it's that first gun that was itty-bitty that would actually fit in your stinking pocket. That wasn't a Derringer or something. And you know what? I don't have a lot of rounds through that, probably only a couple thousand. But that thing never failed to go bang on me, not once. Never. Out of 2,000 rounds. And that's including putting duty rounds in it. And that's... And here's the secret I tell people too. That's after carrying it for a week as an armored car guard in my back pocket as my backup gun, and just pulling it out of my back pocket and shooting it on the range as fast as I can with my duty ammo. So it works. It worked every time for me. Never had a bang. Never had a problem. People will tell you every time a Caltech sucks. It's unreliable. Don't buy them. You have all these problems, especially with the 32 auto version of getting stuck in the... I don't know. Never had a problem. It never failed to go bang on me. So,
well, you just brought up another good point, Ben. And, you know, please, folks, don't listen to only the internet. Don't listen only to gun writers. Don't listen only to your friends and your relatives and other people. Try it for yourself. See what works for you. See what gun actually works. Some guns, like you said, people will say, oh, they're pieces of trash and they work great. And some, it's the opposite. Oh, I've had this this Glock that just has never, ever, 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 ever failed. Well, I've seen your Glocks fail on you, Ben. And, you know, nothing is absolutely perfect. And I know it's a great it's a great marketing slogan that Glock has, but nothing is perfect. But yet some are. I mean, I've got Glocks that have absolutely never malfunctioned in several thousand rounds. So you just have to go out there and try it. You just have to go out there and shoot it. And it also makes you a better shooter.
Yeah, try your gun with your ammo. And it can't be like, hey, you mentioned your Glock and my Glocks. I have one Glock, a Gen 3, that I probably have about 35,000 rounds through. It runs like a champ. I broke it like three times now. I still carry it as a backup weapon or a second gun if I'm not carrying my M&P. But I have a Glock Gen 4 that's newer than that, and I only have about 2,500 rounds through it that I don't trust right now. The stupid thing keeps malfunctioning on me. I broke it twice, and now it's malfunctioning on me again, and I don't trust it worth a whip because it just keeps malfunctioning on me. What can I say? Go try all this stuff. Don't trust anybody. Go out there. You said the 1,000-round trigger job. I love that. I steal it all the time. If your gun gets to that 1,000-round trigger job and you don't have any issues with it, or you can look at your issue and go, oh, this is a me issue, my fingers are in the way, then you're good. Go with it, but
yeah.
Try it.
Yeah, how many times have I mentioned the 1,000-round trigger job? And now I'm starting to change my thinking and maybe up that to a 2,000-round trigger job. You know, the thing is that I've got some Gen 4 Glocks, Ben. I've got, I got three Gen 4s that are flawless. I have one Gen 4 G19, that had two malfunctions in the first 100 rounds. And that's it. And they've all had 1,000-round trigger jobs right now. One of them is with me today, the fourth gen Glock 26 that I have, and they've been fine. So you got to get out there and test this stuff for yourself.
Without a doubt, try it. And you know, thinking about this, me and my buddy bought a Glock 19 Gen 4 at the same time. He had the same breakage as mine did. So without a doubt, they break. That would be the problem with the manufacturer. Yeah, pieces of my Glock fell apart and fell out, so without a doubt it was broken. But then again, you know, we talked a little bit about that time where the manufacturer was shoving them out the door. We both bought our Glock 19s at the height of it, the mess. I paid almost $600 for that Glock 19, and now they're like $525 and $535 or $545. You can get them under for $550 easy. But I really wanted a Gen 4, so I paid the price for it at the time. They were really hard to find. I had a special order one. That's how hard they were. I think that was 2 months after Sandy Hook or something. So, yeah, the manufacturers were shoving them out the door. So even Glock had some oopses go out the door. And I wasn't the only one that had that same malfunction and broken gun. My friend, I guess we got the same batch because he had the same problem. He had the same Glock break. Glock fixed it, no problem. But, you know, so after that was 500 rounds into it. And then, you know, it's kind of set around. It's been a safe gun. I've taken it to some classes and all this other stuff. And then now I got about 2,500 rounds through it, and it, light hammer strike after light hammer strike after light hammer strike. It wasn't going all the way into battery, so I cleaned it really well. I replaced the recoil spring, and now it's working again. So I don't know. I mean, I just don't trust it right now with my life, so that one goes in the safe. And when I carry a gun, I carry my Gen 3. So I'm trying to give you that story so that everybody out there, you have that same experience as me, and you go out there and you try it. And you go, okay, without a doubt, I know this gun is going to work. There shouldn't be any question when you go to that self-defense situation. Is the gun going to work? Is it going to be accurate? Is it going to be reliable? Can I do triple taps or double taps? Or can I fire it really fast and it work? You should know without a doubt that I've tested all this stuff on the range. No big deal.
Okay. Hey, before we're at the range, but we got some time here before we get out there. Yeah, you guys can probably hear the gunfire, even though we're in the car with all the windows closed. But before we go start doing our shooting and our practice, Ben, let's shift gears for a minute and talk a little bit about this this recent ban that the Obama administration put on the 5.56 green tip, supposedly armor-piercing AR-15 ammo. I saw some of your Facebook posts and things about that and your emails. What do you make of that?
They're so full of crap over at the ATF. I can rant on your show because you can get the... Send your hate mail to handgunworld at...
Send your hate mail to bob@handgunworld.com. I'll take the hate mail.
Don't send it to me. Yeah, they're full of crap, and I don't know what else to say about it. And I know it's the BATFE now, but I don't think they deserve the extra title and the extra money. The ATF has been so screwed up in their thoughts and their things in a while. And then most people miss it. This is not the first time they've done this. They did it last year with the 5.45 ammo coming out of Russia, and they just banned the import. And saying that, oh, yeah, now, and that ammo actually was steel core and armor penetrating. And then once it went into a handgun, oh, now it's illegal. Even though, if you look at it, their letter says this is to make law enforcement safer and their jobs better because you can't have ammo that's penetrating their soft body armor. Well, freaking numbnuts, any 5.56 round out of an AR penetrates soft body armor. I got news for you. You just put the body armor up there, it'll probably go through and through both plates. It won't go through and through the plate and the guy, but it'll go through and through both plates. You're just screwed. The level 3A and the level 2A body armor, forget it. That's the most common stuff for police officers. Those handguns, the AR handguns, the AK handguns, that stuff is going through like a hot knife through butter. It doesn't matter. The green tip is just... I'm going to say a bad word there, right there, but it's complete and utter BS. I don't know what their end game is, but now that they see that they can do whatever they want, it's just going to... It's any government agency that's just going to start more and more reach and control, and so they can get more and more funding, so they can have more and more people, so they can get more and more money. That's all it is. It's a power and money thing. It always is, and these guys are trying to do it. We should have oversight. But our oversight goes to our elected leaders and our appointed leaders who, right now, President Obama and I don't have a good word for Eric Holder.
I wonder why.
They're the least distinguished person that's ever held that office by far. And that's saying a lot after Janet Reno. and I have, this is not against Democrats or Republicans. This is, those two individuals are not good people. Yeah, they should be doing that oversight. They should be walking in there and slapping the snot out of somebody after getting some of our emails from them and figuring out what's going on. What you're doing? What? You dummies. You know, just slapping the crap out of them and repealing that just out of hand. But right now, they're just like, hey, that's a good idea. You know, any gun, Eric Holder and President Obama, any gun ban or gun limiting scheme or take anything out of civilians, you know, that's good. They like that. They'll do them all. So,
well, you mentioned you wonder what their end game is, Ben. I think we all know what their end game is to ban whatever they can ban and get control. You're right. It's all about control. They don't give two snots about whether it's armor piercing or anything. They're just banning it because they can, and it's a power grab. And so I want to urge all listeners, you know, we got to stay active. Let's not be complacent. I feel some complacency in the gun advocates movement right now. I think a lot of people are relaxing too much, and they're saying, okay, the scare is over, prices are down, availability is out there, the government's not doing much, so we can kind of relax now because they're not going to try to ban stuff. And oops, up out of left field, here comes this ban on this 5.56 ammo. And so we can't relax.
We can't get completely worked up, but we can't relax. I've been reading a lot of the posts on Facebook and stuff. There's a couple things you can do really easy. ATF actually has a open period where they get to talk about these things, and they have a comments section. You can go to their website, find the actual letter, read what it says. I encourage everybody, before they do some stupid comment, even with the information I gave you, read what the letter says from ATF. read what the law says that they were given command or control over, because, anyways, read the law about armor-piercing ammo and see what it says, and then go read to see what a green tip is, and then you'll understand how overreaching and how stupid they are, and then you can leave a comment there. And I don't suggest that you leave the comment that says you're an idiot. You know, leave the legitimate comment that says, you know, the law says that armor-piercing ammo is this, the green tips are designed and built like this, they don't even fall into that definition, and therefore you shouldn't be banning them. And, you know, some stuff has worked. I mean, one of the campaigns that everybody did out there was when they wanted to change the definition of the SBR stuff, and they wanted to make it so you had to have the background check and you couldn't go through the trust. They wanted to abolish the whole trust, kind of different way to do it. Well, you know, the ATF, they backed down on that one. They lost. They gave up. So it can work. The other comment I've heard that I really, really, if this was you, I don't remember who it was on my Facebook page, I'm sorry, really, really ticked me off when they just put the stupid comment, where's the NRA on all this stuff? Well, you're the freaking NRA. If you guys think the NRA should be doing something and you're part of the NRA, you need to be writing the NRA a letter saying, hey, we're the freaking NRA, and I think you guys should be on the forefront of this one. And it's something I need to do. I need to write the NRA and tell them that they need to get off their butts and do something about this too, because this is the second one in a row. What's next? What ammunition is next is the question. Are they going to keep banning them? Are they going to ban all 5.56 rounds because now there's 5.56 pistols that they can put them in? And since all that ammo is actually armor-piercing because it will go through soft body armor, even though it doesn't fit the legal definition of armor-piercing ammo. But, you know, are they going to ban that too for import and sale? You never know what they're going to reach to, so you got to cut them off at the knees and stop where they are. But so if you want to write a letter there. If you want to think, where's the NRA, where's Gun Owners of America, where's the National Shooting Sports Foundations, one, you need to be a member of that group before you can complain about it, and then two, they all have comments and emails and letters. Man, write them and say, hey, I'm a member, and I think we should be involved in this. We need to get involved. You know, one member in the NRA, you know, 5 million members, me writing an email is not going to, they're not going to, you know, it's, I'm spitting into the wind. But if 3 million of their members wrote them an email and said, hey, we need to do something about this, NRA would get off their butts and do something about this.
Well, sure. And I think, even if it's just a couple thousand members, it's going to get their attention. You know, that's the thing, is it's going to get their attention. We have to realize something about organizations like the NRA. I'm a firm believer in them. I'm a member of the NRA. As a matter of fact, I just got a discount and bought a 5-year membership. But you have to keep the pressure on them. You got to keep applying pressure. You got to keep talking. I think they can get complacent, just like a lot of other organizations can get complacent. You know, just like politicians can get complacent unless you keep the pressure up. You got to keep holding their feet to the fire.
Well, and then also the NRA is busy. I mean, they're a big organization, but they're busy too. Look at all the federal gun bans that are out there right now on the table. I mean, I read another one that they're going to... this wasn't on the federal level. This is at the state level, and I forget what state. It doesn't have a hope in hell of passing, but they're going to ban night vision to anybody that owns a rifle or a gun. If you own a gun, you can't own night vision in the state, because it's supposed to... It's an anti-poaching regulation is what they're calling it.
Yeah, that's a bunch of BS.
So, yeah, there's so much stuff out there that the NRA needs to pick and choose their battles. But since we are the NRA, we are the members of the NRA, we tell them, because they're us, what battles we want them to get involved in.
Exactly.
And that's pretty simple. The NRA will do it because we tell them to. And if not, it's like any other business, and they are a business more than anything else. You know, Gun Owners of America says we're the only no-compromise gun out there. You tell the NRA that you're going to do this, or, you know, I just won't be a member next year. I'll go join the GOA, or I'll go join NSFS, or I'll go join, you know, there's 1,000 different gun helping activist things.
Gun advocates organizations.
Yeah, and NRA is just the biggest one that has the most members. But, hey, I'm a member of 2 or 3 of them. You should probably be a member of 2 or 3 of them, too. And then you can write them letters and say, hey, we should get involved in this.
Second Amendment Foundation is huge. I'm a big fan of Second Amendment Foundation. They've done so much to advance our gun rights in the last 5 or 6 years. I'm a lifetime member with Second Amendment Foundation. Make sure you support those guys.
I'm with you on supporting that. I don't think I'm with you on lifetime memberships of anything. I have decided that, you know, because NRA gave great deals and Second Amendment Foundation, they all give these big, great deals. But you know what? If you do something that I don't like and we have to part ways because you become stupid, I don't want to be a member anymore, so I'm going to take my money elsewhere.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point that I really haven't given much thought of. It's, yeah, that's true. Maybe lifetime memberships are not that great.
There's a lot of, I mean, I'll give you one. How about the ACLU? If you think about it, they came out and years and years and years ago, they were a great organization and they were trying to do stuff to advance liberty in America. And I, you know, hey, I'm all for that. That's me. That would be something I would be involved in. But lately, they've actually done better lately. But in the 90s, holy Toledo, that group. Oh my God, they were a bunch of lawyers suing the government to make money. I did not want my name anywhere near anything with them. If you said ACLU, I would have turned around and walked out. They were such horrible, horrible people in that running that organization and doing stuff. And now I've seen them after Katrina, actually. They're helping gun owners in Katrina. Can you believe that? Yeah, that was my reaction too. Bob's face just got huge. So after that, maybe I'll look at them again. Maybe they are going to be a liberty organization that's going to sue the government on the rights of my behalf to get me more liberty. I'm all about that. But, you know, I'm just afraid these big organizations could very, very well become that very easily if we're not careful. And then I don't want my name anywhere near that stuff. I'm out of there if they start doing that crap. So all you guys out there that are, if you listen to this podcast and you're one of those big top guys on those gun organizations, keep doing the right thing. I'll keep giving you money.
And with that, I think that's a great stopping point. Ben, you want to go shoot?
I want to go shoot.
All right, let's go get some trigger time. Ben, thanks again for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me rant. You guys, write us emails. Go check out my show at Modern Self Protection. You can send me an email at ben@modernselfprotection.com. You don't have to send all the hate mail to Bob. Thank you so much for listening. Love talking to you.
All right, quick break, and I'll be right back.
Well, yeah, it's getting tough out there. Yeah, no doubt. I work in home invasions mostly. Some murder, occasional rape, and I'm a huge advocate of gun control. Absolutely. Competition is stiff, and it doesn't help that every time I kick in a door or smash a window, that I face the possibility of being shot and killed. Listen, the fact is, allowing citizens to own guns creates a hostile work environment for me and my associates. No one should have to work under those conditions. I say make them all illegal. Absolutely. Make all gun ownership illegal. I mean, I break the law for a living. I'm a professional, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, but personally, knowing that most homeowners don't have guns, that would make me a lot more comfortable, more confident, and it would surely increase productivity. No doubt. This is no only doubt. A threat if you
let you listen. Your local violent criminals work hard and put their lives on the line every time they attempt to murder, rape, abduct, or assault a member of the citizenry. They desperately need your help. With your support, there may finally come a day when a violent criminal can have his way with you or someone you love without the fear, anxiety, and stress caused by knowing there's a possibility his victim might be armed. Please show your support by voting for stronger anti-gun legislation, because criminals prefer unarmed citizens.
All right, back with you. Well, 4 hours went by, but only probably 30 seconds for you. We had a good practice session. I got to say, it was a good thing I got back out on the range, because I'm rusty. Folks, shooting is a perishable skill. Let me urge you, please don't let it perish. You got to keep practicing. But we worked on lateral movement like we talked about.
a little bit of forward and backward. I also wanted to do some function testing. I found out my Glock 42 is running great right now. So whatever Glock did to it, since I've got it back from them, it's running well. I didn't shoot too much of my carry ammo through it, but even with my carry ammo rapid fire, it was running very well. So I'm glad about that. All in all, it was a good day at the range. I think each one of us shot well over 200 rounds. Good practice in it. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation Ben and I had in the Handgun World Mobile Studio on the way to the range. Well, folks, I want to finish off by saying, if you want to support the show, you notice that I don't have sponsors on this show. I don't run a whole lot of commercials. I don't run any commercials, really. And if you want to support the show and support what we do, consider joining our Shooters Club. It's a collection of instructional videos. Some of you have always said that you wanted to take a class that Ben and I taught, but you can't make it or whatever, or we're not coming to your area. The Shooters Club is the next best thing. We have a lot of instructional videos on there for only $75 a year or $8 per month. Again, that's $75 for a one-year membership or $8 per month. And we give you password-protected exclusive access to a lot of cool videos that Ben and I have put up. Don't forget about our classes. We are coming to Ohio. We're teaching Beyond Concealed Carry in Ohio. We are going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota to team up with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. That's coming up real soon. That's May. We are teaming up again with Glenn Tate and his members of his team, and we are going to Western Washington out to SQUIM, and we're doing this once again, just like last year's very popular class. We're teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, a two-day version, and we're doing a lot of two-day classes. Seattle or SQUIM is a two-day. South Dakota is a two-day class. Ohio is a two-day class. And for you last-minute people, April, we have only one slot left in Dallas. So if you are in North Texas or near North Texas and you want to take one of our one-day classes, there's one spot left. Maybe by the time this podcast releases, it might even be sold out. But that's it. Otherwise, we've pretty much got a sold-out class in Dallas. That's Beyond Concealed Carry. It's a one-day class. You can find all of these at www.handgunworld.com. That's www.handgunworld.com. Last but certainly not least, you don't even have to spend any money to support my show. If you make an Amazon purchase, I know a lot of you buy things on Amazon. I do. You make an Amazon purchase. If you make it through my link, through my Amazon store link, proceeds help benefit the Handgun World podcast. Just go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store, find my link, save it, bookmark it, put it in your favorites, whatever you want to do so that you go there every time when you make an Amazon purchase. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Catch you next week. Goodbye.